This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The attacks of September 11th, 2001 created a wounded America. And the question we have today is, did that wound ever heal? Did it make America stronger or weaker? Look around you today, and it's hard to argue that the United States is in a better place before the attacks of these World Trade Center and the Pentagon. We're in a pandemic where half the nation won't take a safe and effective vaccine. There's a movement of the misinformed who believe JFK Jr. is still alive, that Trump really won the election, and that domestic violence is the solution to their political grievances. Is all of this actually connected? A new PBS Frontline documentary, America After 9/11, makes that case. It airs tonight on KLRN PBS San Antonio at 8 p.m. And I'm joined by Michael Kirk. He is the director, the co-writer, and co-producer of the Frontline film, America After 9/11. And Michael Kirk, welcome to The Source.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Dave. Thank you.
So there's two bookends that we can kind of look along the timeline. Both of these bookends are using the date to sort of signify the importance of these events. We have 9/11 and we have January 6th. You say those, you know, those, people know exactly what you're talking about. And you say there is not just connective tissue putting these things together, but it's almost as if January 6th was the inevitable outcome of 9/11?
Well, I don't know about inevitable, but I've made 19 films during the last 20 years about 9/11 and its aftermath. I've also made films fascinated by the division and distrust in America, so I've made films about race and films about immigration and films about economic dislocation, especially around 2008. So a lot of things obviously go into what's going on in America right now. But when we step back to make the 20-year anniversary and said we're not going to be down inside all of the details of the films we made, because that was 19 films, and we'll get us down to a couple of hours, and we'll try to find what's the end point. And when we pulled back to see what a long-term perspective would reveal, we saw a through line of the many things that happened in the aftermath of 9/11 that led us to polarization, distrust of the government and the democracy, led to the events of January 6th at the Capitol building. And I would assert it's only by tracing the complex legacy of the things after 9/11 that we understand what happened. Trust eroded, wars abroad, insurrection at home.
So if you talk to a person that was at the insurgency on January 6th, and you say, why are you here? They're not going to bring up 9/11 or they're going into Iraq or Afghanistan. But just like, you know, if you have a lineup of dominoes and one tumbles, the one that falls on the very end says, I didn't fall because of the very first one. I only fell because of the one next to me. But there is connection between that wave of action.
Which one had to fall? And one of the things that you do if you're a filmmaker of thank God, our experience and access, you sort of say, let's order up the 8 or 9 most significant things that we think happened. Let's lay them out. Let's go talk to 30 or 40 people, in this case, 37 people, for hours at a time. And let's see what they think, how they think things like Osama bin Laden getting away in Afghanistan and getting to Pakistan, weapons of mass destruction, were they lies? What were they? Colin Powell's moment in the United Nations, the most trusted man in America, some people said. What happens there? Guantanamo detention, Abu Ghraib, the secret intelligence gathering, the drones, the kill squads, the lies. And you lay them all out around events, and you talk to the people who are there and the people who think about these things. We've had a very good access, I think, to a lot of intelligent and, I think, experienced people who talk about the way fear has poisoned the American political bloodstream. And it's pretty hard to not think this would all have an effect that might bring us to that moment where we're so divided, we're so polarized, 70 million Americans on both sides, and some percentage of that 70 million that were on the side that was unhappy and polarized and distrustful. Some percentage of them, you could imagine being super angry and super lit up on that day on January 6th, and this having a not the only effect, not the only reason, but boy, you got to believe that the country, which was once one kind of a country on September 10th, and is now a different kind of a country, that you've got to be able to say to yourself, or you should be able to say to yourself, I wonder what 9/11 and the events that I've just articulated had to do with all of that.
Our call-in number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Our lines are open if you want to join our conversation as we talk about America after 9/11. You want to call in and tell us your experience on 9/11. And if you see today's trust crisis that we have in the nation, how we have so many people in the nation who are ungovernable, is that a product of how we responded to 9/11? This is a clip from the Frontline documentary, America After 9/11. The response to 9/11 was largely driven by the attitudes of Vice President at the time, Dick Cheney.
We also have to work though, sort of the dark side, if you will. We've got to spend time in the shadows and in the intelligence world. A lot of what needs to be done here will have to be done quietly, without any discussion, using sources and methods that are available to our intelligence agencies, if we're going to be successful.
Cheney's dark side approach would be put into action in Afghanistan, where the U.S. and its allies captured thousands of prisoners.
I think the response was just part of this whole attempt to demonize everyone and all Muslims who were caught in the war zone. So there was a lot of false jailing and capture and jailing of people who may have been sympathetic to al-Qaeda but had nothing to do with al-Qaeda.
Cheney wanted to get tough with the detainees and didn't want international law or the United States Constitution to get in the way.
And Michael Kirk, so the United States, we lost our moral footing.
Yeah, yes, I think that's right. I mean, here's the interesting thing that happened, Dave. George W. Bush, president of the United States for about 9 months when this happens, goes on television the first night, America eagerly worried and fearful and listening to the president. And he says, look, we're the good guys. This is a historic battle of good versus evildoers. And he creates a kind of thing that says, America's the good people. We're going to go on behalf of good people everywhere. The world is going to be with us, and we're going to go clean this up. He means at that time, we're going to go to Afghanistan and grab Osama bin Laden, who's been being protected by the Taliban, and we're going to grab him and we're going to capture him, and it's going to be over. But Cheney, on the other hand, is terrified about the surprise. They all in that administration were surprised by the terrorist attacks. And he says, never again. Fear is deeply inside the vice president. And he starts in action a different part of the government and a different way of thinking about it than what Bush was saying. And you, from the very beginning, it's a confusing picture, both to the world and to policymakers and to people who have to enact what Cheney wants to have happen. So it gets very complicated very quickly, and people see what America does and say, hang on, what? What just happened?
Right, and so one thing leads to another. We go into Afghanistan, we go into Iraq. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. And people see so many lives lost, so many people suffered and damaged from all of this action. Where did it leave us? Where are we today? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're talking about Frontline documentary, America After 9/11. Stay with us.
suspect Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab,
Nidal Malik Hassan,
Nadir Sufi,
Faisal Shahzad, connected to the Taliban.
There was this constant torquing up of phobia about Arabs, about Muslims, about foreigners.
There's no question there is a Muslim problem in the world.
Not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims.
All the people who have tried to blow airliners out of the sky pretty much look alike.
Equating them with criminals and terrorists.
We need to kill them. You're in danger, I'm in danger.
And throwing Obama into that camp.
Why do you think 1 in 4 think that he is a Muslim?
He was raised a Muslim. Barack Obama raised as a Muslim.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Frontline documentary film, America After 9/11. It airs tonight at 8 p.m. on PBS, KLRN here in San Antonio. And we're joined by the director, co-writer, and co-producer of the film, Michael Kirk. And so you don't really dig directly into this in your film, but the media had a huge role to play in the drumbeat to bringing us into these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we saw this media machine kick in again during the withdrawal of Afghanistan. And we saw how warmongery, you know, not just Fox News, but CNN and the networks can be, which brought us to where some uncomfortable places, so some bad decisions, Michael Kirk.
Well, one of the things we all, I think, should worry about and probably do worry about is what is the truth and what happened to the truth? Wasn't there once a kind of common agreement that some things were true and science was more or less right? And I think that's another casualty of what happened, both in the run-up to the Iraq war, where the weapons of mass destruction information was so badly handled, both by the government and the Central Intelligence Agency and the intelligence sides of the government, but also the media, big media, the New York Times, the Washington Post.
Right, and so, but a lot of what you talk about is a mistrust in the United States. We have a lack of trust. Trust is broken, and part of that is the trust in the media. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, and why did that happen? It was, one of the reasons was they were flat out wrong and in a kind of weird cheerleader posture with what was going on with the government during that time. And we were all afraid. Everybody was afraid. And obviously, I guess, so was the New York Times and the Washington Post. As I say, fear had become just part of the poison in our politics. And with anthrax attacks and God knows what else, everybody's so fearful. Anybody?
Right. You didn't mention it in the show, but the Washington sniper thing.
Absolutely. I mean, there were just any time anything happened, it was attributed to a terrorist attack. That's a lot of what you just heard in the sound from our film as we started this segment, Dave. This is legitimate news organizations in a lot of respects jumping on events that happen to have Sikhs or Muslims involved, and people attacking mosques. The fear was just so alive, and it was being, I think, capitalized in some ways by the press and by politicians, and that's when the truth, which was already probably under assault in some other dimensions, was really exposed to be something that was in play.
Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. We're talking about the Frontline documentary, America After 9/11. Today's program is in collaboration with the American Homefront Project, made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So we have George W. Bush, and then we have Barack Obama, and then we have Donald Trump.
Calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Trump really came in and articulated a lot of the things that were already whispered.
I think Islam hates us. There's something there that there's a tremendous hatred.
Trump took all of that anti-Muslim rhetoric, anti-Muslim hate, and weaponized it and used it inside of our own country to enact his agenda.
The war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake, all right? They lied. They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none.
And he incited Americans' fear of Barack Obama.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS.
And Michael Kirk, you say in your documentary, America After 9/11, that Donald Trump didn't break America. It was already broken. He just was able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, a lot of people say that Donald Trump broke America, but in fact, a broken America elected Donald Trump. And that's really kind of what the idea of the film is, that we slowly but surely, in lots of different ways, in some ways independent of whatever your political party is, we were broken. We were, as we just said, the truth was in play and extremely malleable. The press hadn't done its very best work back in the weapons of mass destruction days. And people were like, well, I can't believe it. What can I believe? And by the time you get to, and you've been through Bush and you've been through Obama, and there were plenty of things Obama did that weren't exactly what people thought they were voting for when they voted for Barack Obama about this war. He was stuck in the quagmire as well, and so was his government, and so was America. And by the time you get to Trump, who sees it all as a kind of wedge issue and recognizes that a lot of the people on one particular side who feel especially dislocated, who feel especially divided, who feel especially done wrong by the American government, some of them, many of them, military veterans. Trump, through his language and his playing on the fears and the racism inherent in a lot of these arguments, independent of what political persuasion you are, this, all of this was still very much a part of America. And Trump was very good at weaponizing it. And as people in the film tell us, he brought the war home to the streets of America, especially once Black Lives Matter hit the streets and Trump knew he had a war he could fight, which was on the streets of America.
Right. He would demonize, mischaracterize, lie about who the protesters were, and then use the same tactics, the same gear from the fighting these foreign wars on Americans.
Yes, and he used even the language, which is fascinating. We have a section in the film where, we got used to hearing about the war on terror and the international terrorists and terrorism outlaws. Well, Trump used all those words about Antifa, all those words about Black Lives Matter. He made them. It was the same vocabulary we were used to hearing about the war in the Middle East, and now it was the war in Portland, Oregon, or the war in the cities of America, the streets of America, and I think people already fearful.
Right. So I want to get back to the original question: was were these responses inevitable? Did George W. Bush, did he botch the response to 9/11? Of course, everyone remembers him with the bullhorn at the pile, and saying all the right things about telling people not to take out their anger against Muslims here in the United States. But, he launched an unnecessary war in Iraq. He botched what happened in Afghanistan. I mean, we didn't get Osama bin Laden when there was a chance. I mean, you just kind of wonder. And then it was just he put his faith in people who were not qualified but were loyal to the Bush machine. Was this, how much of this does George W. Bush own?
Well, he was the president of the United States, so he owns, and Obama owns, and Trump owns, and Biden owns. Biden was vice president and handling Iraq and Afghanistan on behalf of Obama in lots of ways. So they all own it. It's one of those huge problems. It's the longest war in American history. It's bound to have affected every single president. I think Bush, the thing about Bush that in your litany, Dave, which I agree with, you neglected to mention Cheney, Wolfowitz, the neocons, Rumsfeld. There was a force on George W. Bush of fear and anger and ambition to do things in the Middle East from at least the neocons.
Right, and they were still trying to relive the Kuwait war. I'm going to get a caller in on this before we run out of time with you. Let's get Samir. Samir, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I'm a Pakistani-American. I was born in Karachi, moved when I was seven to America, so pretty much lived here my whole life. But after 9/11, it kind of a lot of things changed. And I remember I was actually in an Arab-Israeli politics class my last semester at UT Austin, which got extremely conflicted by the end of that semester. But by the end of it, when I got back home after I graduated, I had doors slammed in my face. I had people at work who were, I was new. I just started out after college and questioning where I really was from, if I was going to be put on that list, that there was some list or something from the government. And it was really hard time. I had my aunt's house was spray painted with terrorists on there. And it was a rough few years. And I 100% believe this is the end game of that kind of thing, the Trumpism, the extremeness that we have, you know, because after that happened, then we had the Great Recession, we had the Tea Party, and it just kept getting to this point. And I think you guys are 100% right that it's all full circle. My hope is that at some point this has, it has to fizzle out. Is my only hope left, you know, without turning into a pure cynic at this point.
All right, Samir, thank you for the call. I'm going to get back to Michael Kirk before we run out of time. Towards the end of the film, you do talk about, there's some discussion about how do we get back to a government that we can trust in, or how do we heal 9/11?
Yes, and I think, you know, it was one of the questions I wanted to go ask everybody who sort of we use in the film. And I think it's not going to fizzle, as Samir said. I think something has to happen. Something is happening. I don't exactly know what it is. I'm still reporting for the future on what's going to happen. But I think there's something that's happened in our politics. That the spark was this, and the spark is an inherent racism, and lots of other things, and I think it's not just going to get better all by itself, and what I worry about is the democracy itself. Forget parties, but the election coming in 2022, and the things that are in the future, they are all going to be responses to the pollution of our politics over the last 20 years. And I don't know what changes that.
Right now we're seeing it again. People on the right-wing media exploiting Afghanis who are coming to the United States, raising these same fears all over again. It's as we've never learned, Michael Kirk.
Well, you know, you should watch Afghanistan very closely, because when Obama pulled the troops out of Iraq, ISIS rose. Because there was a vacuum there, and the Sunni in the north needed it. The same thing. Watch Afghanistan now. ISIS and Al Qaeda have metastasized all across the northern part of Africa,
right.
And Afghanistan could be home base for something. And America might not be done with Afghanistan.
Michael Kirk is the director, co-writer, and co-producer of the frontline film America After 9/11. It airs tonight on KLRN PBS at 8 p.m. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about local remembrances of 9/11. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Picking up where we left off, we're talking with the director of America After 9/11. How do we heal? Has America ever healed from 9/11? We know that we sent servicemen and women around the world to fight these wars. And at the very least we ought to be doing is figuring out how do we help the people who saw the ugly side of things in these wars heal as well. We're going to be talking about that right now, local veterans remembering 9/11. And we welcome your calls and emails. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined now by Getha Rodriguez, retired U.S. Marine Corps captain, served in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, co-chair of the San Antonio Regional Community Veterans Engagement Board, and the regional director for 4Block, a national nonprofit that prepares veterans for careers with the nation's top companies. Getha Rodriguez, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thank you for having me here, David.
Also with us, Ben Miranda, retired U.S. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant, served in Operation Enduring Freedom, Director of Operational Impact and Outreach for the San Antonio-based National Service Organization Endeavors, and a member of the Texas Governor Greg Abbott's Texas Military Preparedness Commission. And Ben Miranda, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, David.
So, Getha, let me start with you. Here we are, getting ready for 20 years on Saturday, the 9/11. We just saw how America withdrew from Afghanistan. Speaking for yourself, and then we'll try to widen it out more, how are you feeling these days?
Well, speaking for myself, and I'm sure plenty of people can also relate, as I've talked to a lot of veterans as well, but speaking for myself, you know, it's obviously, a lot of emotions going on, you know, anger, frustration, sadness, questioning, you know, questioning whether or not it was worth it. The 20 years that we spent, I have friends who joined after 9/11 who are still on active duty, spent their entire adult lives serving during this America's longest war. So, you know, it's really a tough time for a lot of people, including myself. I did serve in Afghanistan and, you know, it did everything that we could to support the guys on the ground in Afghanistan. At the end of the day, you know, it's a really, really tough. It's a really tough time to be a veteran.
And Ben Miranda, how are you doing?
You know, speaking for myself as well, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia, just, you know, a lot of remembrance. In the last couple of 2-3 weeks, I've been able to connect with a lot of my battle buddies that we served together and just checking up on each other. And asking the question, how are you doing? A lot of my friends have reached out to me too, just to simply ask, how are you doing? And that in itself has long, a long way, just checking up on each other, making sure that we're doing well.
And it's looking after each other. That's a key part of this process, Ben?
It is. You know, one of the key components of making sure that veterans stay connected and that we're doing well is looking out for each other, just as we did when we served and when we wore the uniform. It's making sure that, you know, that we're always there for our battle buddy to their left or to their right or at the front or in the rear, and always making sure that we're staying connected with each other and staying connected with all the wonderful veteran service organizations that are in the state of Texas and outside of the state, to make sure that we're connected to those resources that are here for our veterans.
We do want to hear from our listeners about your 9/11 memories. We all remember where we were on that terrible day. And you don't have to be military. We do want to hear from you. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Today's program is in collaboration with the American Homefront Project, made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I have a voicemail. This is from David.
My name is David, and I can tell you that on that day, my wife was sick. I called in to work so I could be home and to take care of her. And we honestly didn't even know what happened. And we hadn't had the TV on or the radio, so we didn't know a thing about it. But about 9 o'clock, we turned on the TV and saw what was going on. I remember I stood there and I watched the footage, and well, I just couldn't even believe it. I just stood there in disbelief at what had happened. Now, I want to say this about it, and I hope that this will be something that will help with the conversation today. In all due respect to President Bush, because I think he's a good man, he said these people attacked us because they hate our freedom. And, you know, I just don't think that I believe that. I don't think that really makes sense. You have to stop and ask yourself, why would people do something like this? Why would they give their own lives to attack other people and cause the deaths of so many? It isn't because they hated our freedom. No, It's because they hated us. And we have to ask ourselves, and we have to reflect on that and contemplate, why do they hate us that much to do such a horrible thing? And so it gets very complicated to look over that.
Getha Rodriguez, a retired U.S. Marine Corps captain. You've served in Afghanistan. You've been very active here in San Antonio helping veterans, move on with their lives and deal with this. Is this a question that many people have? Like, why did this happen? What are the motivations? Do they wonder what brought this on?
Well, I think, for those that actually serve in Afghanistan, one, you're on active duty. It's a totally different mindset, right? You're there, you signed up to serve and defend our country. That's why we're there. And so when, in 9/11, I was actually at the basic school in Quantico, Virginia. And all of us, of course, there was shock, right? We had gone through a very long period of peacetime. The initial shock, of course, was there, but for people actually serving, and then those that came to serve afterwards as a result of 9/11, I don't think it was so much why did this happen? I mean, I think our mindset was more like, hey, we've been attacked. We are now going to defend ourselves and we're going to defend our country. I think it wasn't until much later when we started to see how the war started to progress, how, maybe not having very clear goals that we did maybe in the beginning, but after, so many years had passed, we started our military started to take a different turn. And I think that's where, people started to question, like, why are we still there? And, 20 years later, we finally pulled out. And so obviously a lot of questions for military leaders, our political leaders. We never really had a clear end strategy. And as a result, you see what we just saw last week and over the last couple of weeks. So I don't think that most military members questioned it when it was happening. It wasn't until later when you started to question, how we responded.
Let's go to Megan on the phones, 833-TPR-TALK. And Megan, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi there. My name is Megan. I'm actually currently serving in the United States Army. I'm actually getting ready to retire after 20 years. I joined right after 9/11, and I served in OAS in Afghanistan in 2010. I'm a nurse. I lost dozens of battle buddies over these last 20 years. It's been something to be, serving, and your entire time we are at war. We were never at peacetime the entire time that I was serving. So I just wanted to say that our efforts over in Afghanistan were not in vain. We did everything that we could to support, just like the other gal had said, and that it is really important that we all remind each other that we did what we could with the best resources that we had available to us, despite the fact that sometimes it was a very overwhelming mission. So I just thank you for letting me comment on that.
Well, Megan, thank you for calling in and helping us have a better understanding of what it's like. And Ben Miranda, if you could comment on Megan's call.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as she mentioned that she came on active duty as a result of 9/11, it has served for 20 years, and during all that time, we've been at war. And I could tell you, we know that approximately 3.2 million men and women have served in our United States Armed Forces during the last 20 years that are now, and are now coming back as a veteran, and it's just a lot of things. Our country has seen a lot of things, specifically for veterans, that we didn't see even before that. So I could honestly say that one thing that's come out of during the last 20 years is that resources and organizations are more robust for veterans now than pre-9/11. So we know that there's resources out there for veterans that need resources, whether it's mental health, employment, healthcare, quality of life, education. During the last 20 years, I know that our nation has done a phenomenal job, whether it's a nonprofit organization working alongside the VA, making sure that resources and are there for the veterans. That's one thing that I know that I could say that that's good that's come out of it. Veterans are united. Veteran service organizations are providing services for veterans. And it's veterans helping veterans that a lot of times make the difference.
We're talking to local veterans today, and we do want to hear from you. Remembering 9/11, are you having some difficult feelings of processing? Do you remember 9/11? Was that a motivator for you to enlist now that we came out of Afghanistan and a very messy process? How are you doing today? Do you need resources? Do you need help? Do you want to talk it out? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you just want to talk about 9/11, this is a civilian and how this impacted you, and how do you think America can heal still? We're still trying to heal from this. We want to hear from you as well. 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're remembering 9/11. We have local veterans' voices, and we'd like to include yours. The number is 833-TPR-TALK. Today's program is in collaboration with the American Homefront Project, made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And we have Natalie on the line. Natalie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you so very much for this opportunity. I just wanted to say I served in 1987 to 1995. And I became a teacher after that. And I remember on 9/11, I was on my way to school. And I dropped my daughter off and I got into my classroom. And we were able to see what was happening. And I told my kids, we need to be prepared because we are about to possibly go into war. And I waited because I had been out, but I knew I was still young enough for them to call me back. And I was getting prepared in my mind, hey, something is about to happen and we may be going. And I had a little girl at that time. So even though, you know, I served then and I wasn't serving anymore, I was getting my mind ready to get ready for war because it looked like another Pearl Harbor.
And Natalie, did you go back in?
No, they did not call me back in. But I was prepared, and I was getting myself prepared, and I was getting my family prepared. And, you know, we didn't know what was happening. I mean, that day was just crazy. Mm-hmm. I also remember just going and falling and starting to recite the Lord's Prayer as I went into my classroom to prepare my children who were, ninth graders who'd never seen anything like this before.
Natalie, thank you so much for that call. Geta Rodriguez, people... who had any connection to the military. I remember here in San Antonio on 9/11, how all the local installations went into complete lockdown. They were on full alert. San Antonio scrambled. We tried to figure out, what does this mean for us? Were these attacks going to be limited to just the Eastern Seaboard? Would we see something down here? It was quite a day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was true at any military installation or any city that hosts a military installation around the world, right? Everybody was just, getting prepared and, remember that. Most people remember it very vividly, for those service members who have families, families, whether it was, parents and, brothers, siblings, stuff like that, or their own children. My children were out in town when the base got locked down. And, fortunately, what we did see was the communities that support the military installations really step up. When my daughter was taken home by her school principal that evening because I couldn't leave. It was definitely, definitely a day that was, everything was heightened and, we were all, but for every military member, I mean, this is what we prepare for. This is what we train for. So there wasn't a lot of time to think about. It was like, yes, we know we may be going to war. And, now it's like, okay, how do we prepare and get ready to go as quickly as we can? And I think that was just pretty much the general mindset for anyone who either was on active duty or like Natalie, who had just left, like, hey, they might be calling me back. But for all communities around the world, that's one thing that I think your guest today kind of mentioned that one thing that we saw at that point was that there was this unity, right? Everybody got, you know, we all came together as Americans. We're going to go back and we're going to defend ourselves and we're going to avenge what happened on 9/11. And that was something that, you know, it made you kind of proud, you know, made you proud to be an American, made you proud to be serving, as scary as it was. But at the same time, like that period was very short-lived. And as the war drew on, I think things kind of took a turn. I do want to mention one thing, though, really quickly. And that's that, you know, we're talking about veterans today and the impact that it's having on veterans and civilians. But it's really important to remember our military families. We have a lot of Gold Star families who lost their loved ones in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what happened over the last, you know, what's happened over the last couple of weeks, you know, that has also had a really significant, taken a really significant toll on those families as well, as children, spouses, you know, going through a lot of the same emotions that we've been going through because, you know, their loved ones served. They missed, you know, for a lot of them missed their kids' childhood years. And so there's really a lot to process. And as Ben said, it's a good thing we do have a lot of organizations. Thankfully, we have the Vietnam veterans to thank for that because of their experience. A lot of, you know, today's veterans have way more resources than any generation of veteran has had.
Let's go to a caller. We have Mary on the line. And Mary, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just calling because I was just hearing what was going on in that, how they had pulled out of the war. I'm still trying to understand all this. I really don't understand too much about politics and the war and stuff. But I remember when it happened. I think it was 20 years ago, right? The first time?
The what?
The war? I mean, the 9/11 event? So
9/11 is 20 years ago on Saturday will be the exact date.
Okay, yeah, because I remember having a sticker. I had got an inspection sticker, and it had the numbers 911 on it, and it just brought back, like, sentimental feelings for me. And I wanted to call in and tell, you know, everybody who helped out that day and the days after, thank you for helping, since, you know, everybody uniting together, you know, we can get things done.
Right. Thank you for your call, Mary. I appreciate that, you calling in. Thank you so much. I have an email from R. Garcia. It says, the Afghanistan withdrawal is like reliving the fall of Saigon. Will it be known as the fall of Afghanistan? Bill Miranda, retired U.S. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant. So, you know, we spent 20 years in Afghanistan, and it seems like, I mean, we probably could have spent another 20 years there, and well, I don't know if it would have done any good or not. We would have been lost more of our great, I mean, these are the people who serve are the greatest, the men and women that we have in our society. Is it really worth it to be there for such a prolonged time?
You know, the question is very profound, whether it was worth it or not. From the perspective as a service member, one who served, and now as a veteran, my worth was being there and ensuring that all the troops, whether you were a Marine, sailor, whether you were a soldier or an airman, that you came home. You know, that was my priority, and it's making sure that the troops that I led were equipped, trained, and organized to make sure that we were taking care of the mission. And very seldom, you know, from personal experience, very seldom was at any time during my deployments did we sit down around the hooch and discuss whether we were doing the right thing or not. We hardly ever discussed that. What we discussed was, how's your family doing? How's your kiddos doing? What are we going to do to make sure that we get home safe? How's mom doing? How's dad doing? And, you know, really, really focusing on the health and morale of the troops. And again, very seldom did we have discussions. Is it worse that we're being here? Because we knew why we were there. You know, 9/11 happened. We knew what happened during that tragic event. So the self-worth was making sure that our battle buddies were taken care of, making sure that your troops were taken care of, making sure that we had what we needed to do, have to ensure that we were organized and successful while we were deployed. You know, from San Antonio specifically, you know, there's roughly 250,000 veterans that live in the Bexar County area. That's a lot of veterans. 80,000 are active duty personnel that are stationed in Joint Base San Antonio, whether it's Fort Sam Houston, Randolph, Lackland Air Force Base. You know, statistics do show that 1 in 8 residents in Bexar County are tied to someone in the military, whether it's an uncle, an aunt, a brother, or a sister. Now that we're here, what do we do now? That's the key. What do we do now? And, you know, what can veterans and military families do to make sure that they get back to better wherever they're at? And if I could share just five quick things, five quick things of what we can do now. Make sure that we're acknowledging our feelings. Our feelings are valid. You know, we're, some of us are feeling frustrated. Some of us are feeling sad, angry, distressed. Know that your feelings are valid. Secondly, come up for some air. You know, if we're constantly watching and seeing the news and seeing what's going on, stop. Go out and get some air. Go out and do something that's not going to be focusing just on what's going on today, because that in itself brings up a lot of stress. Third, ground yourself with what's in your power. Know what you can control and know what you cannot control. Fourth, seek support and connection. If there's any veteran or military family or families of veterans that need to talk to someone, as you stated earlier, David, we're an organization that's in San Antonio, and we provide an array of services for veterans and their families, from mental health and housing programs. And if we can't provide it, we will connect that veteran and family member to someone that can provide and assist that veteran or military family. And fifth, recognize that there's change. We saw a lot of changes in the last 3 weeks. So know that there's changes, but really focusing on these five things can really help a veteran and their family, understanding that a lot of times things are out of our control, but know that there's resources in our communities to help the veteran and the family members to make sure that they get back to better from wherever they're at.
Getha Rodriguez, I have about a minute left. We need last words.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, and I want to thank Ben, and Endeavors is a phenomenal organization, all the organizations that serve. But I do want to add just two more things, if I could, to that list. And that's that, you know, continue checking on each other to all of the veterans that are out there and to our military families or military-connected families. That's really important. And I know people have been doing that. And then the other thing is, it's also important for us to continue to, and yes, we need to take our breaks when we need them, take that knee when you need to, but we also need to continue to serve. And there's many veterans right now that are advocating for our Afghan allies, because that's a really big source of contention, making sure that we're taking care of those people who served with us and put their lives on the line with our troops. So if there's any way to continue to serve in your community, in whatever capacity, right? We had a sense of purpose on active duty. We have a mission. We can continue to do that in various other ways. And so we're helping, trying to get people to other veterans involved with helping any families that are coming in from Afghanistan, continuing to advocate with our elected officials to ensure that we keep our promise to those allies.
Getha Rodriguez, retired U.S. Marine Corps captain, served in Afghanistan, co-chair of the San Antonio Regional Community Veterans Engagement Board. Ben Miranda, retired U.S. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant, served in Operation Enduring Freedom. He is part of the organization Endeavors. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.